you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher. Oh,
there's not an easy answer to that.
Second moves in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
It's poked to the near side, because that's off center, scores! Justin Williams, I believe, is the man. A minute four into overtime.
Last night in Washington, the Capitals defeat the Maple Leafs in overtime, taking a 3-2 series lead in what I believe, and we'll talk about it momentarily, has been the most compelling of the first round playoff series. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we wish a good morning to the universe as we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to be all over the NHL playoffs, the first round coming to an end. For some teams, it has already come to an end. But by, I believe, Monday, it would be the last day possible for the first round. Maybe Tuesday, if I can actually do some simple math in my head. But the first round is rapidly coming to a conclusion in what has been a tremendously entertaining first round of the NHL playoffs. Alongside Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. Facebook.com. You can find some of our work there. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to you, gentlemen. How are you both doing? Are you enjoying the lovely April snow showers we're experiencing this morning?
Yeah, it's almost fitting that it's snowing right now with all of this good hockey that we're able to watch. It's a little bit unfortunate if you were planning to hit the golf course, but you know, you mentioned, Drew, that the Capitals-Leafs series has been the most compelling for you. I think it's just been the best hockey, and I don't think many people are going to argue with that. You've had 4 of 5 games go to overtime. Every single goal in the Caps-Leafs series has been a one-goal game. And if you look at that game yesterday, it was back and forth, very even. That game could have easily gone either way. And the Capitals get that goal from Justin Williams, a bit of a missed assignment. Morgan Rielly goes for a little bit of a skate behind the net, but not many people gave the Toronto Maple Leafs a chance in the series, Dave. And now it's going to go to 6 games. There's a good chance that it goes back to Washington for a 7th game. And give the Leafs a lot of credit. Not only can these guys score goals, but they've been playing very well defensively. I thought Freddie Anderson was very solid last night. I felt bad for him. But again, I mean, this Caps team has so much firepower. And Justin Williams, we've seen him do it so many times with the LA Kings. And he does it again for the Caps.
Yeah, and I mean, from a Washington perspective, you have to think to yourself, you see Alexander Ovechkin leave the game in that first period after the, you know, the hit from Kadri, and you're thinking to yourself, if Alexander Ovechkin goes down, you know, how big is that? How much of an impact does that have on this Capitals team? And, you know, sure enough, he is that guy. I mean, that guy's a horse. I mean, that guy just doesn't – he'll take pain.
And Russian
he'll
just come, machine never
yeah,
breaks.
And he comes back in the second period, first shift, big hit. And, you know, he was a force last night. So, no, it was good. And Justin Williams, he just keeps, you know, getting those games. I think that was his 7th Stanley Cup game winning goal or something like that. So, he's just, he's so clutch, even though he tries to claim he's not that clutch. And it just goes to show you. But I agree with you, as I'm very impressed by Toronto, because this is a team that I didn't anticipate this series being as good as it's been. And that's largely because Toronto has elevated their game to kind of try and match what Washington brings.
It's all about speed, and there have been so many parts of this series where Washington just can't get anything going offensively because they don't have the puck. And there was a big part of that third period where the Washington Capitals, I think, had one shot in 10 minutes the first half of the third period there, and then they started to bring it on in the second half of the third period. But, you know, everybody's talking about the Nazem Kadri hit on Alex Ovechkin, and, you know, it's a tough one for me to call, right? He gets the tripping penalty, and you could call it clipping, you could call it low bridging, whatever you want to call it, Drew, but the reality is, I mean, it was a dirty hit. And, you know, Alex Ovechkin, you know, he might have sold it a little bit staying on the ice, and then he comes back later in the game, and then
he missed the rest of that period. So I don't know that he if he was selling it, I don't know that he doesn't that he misses the rest of the period.
But he stayed down there for quite a long time, and then he comes back later, and he was, you know, running Jake Gardner. You saw that hit. I believe that was the second period. If not, it was the third period where he laid out Jake Gardner. So I'm not saying that Nazem Kadri should be suspended, but when a guy doesn't have the ability to protect himself, he's going the other way. And
Rule 44.1, clipping. Clipping is the act of throwing the body from any direction across or below the knees of an opponent.
Right.
I mean, he hit him right at the knees, you know, even a little bit lower than the knees. It was a clear clip. I don't think there was any definition and any way that you could call it. You wouldn't say it was a clip.
And Barry Trotz wanted the 5-minute major, right, Drew? I mean, it was obvious that the Caps wanted Kadri to get more than 2 minutes. But at the end of the day, I mean, Washington did score on that power play. TJ Oshie scored, I think it was 45 seconds after the penalty. So they got their revenge in that way. But certainly it was a questionable hit at the very least.
A player may not deliver a check in a clipping manner, nor lower his own body position to deliver a check on or below an opponent's knees.
Well, point blank, you can't hit a guy below the knees. Yeah. So you can't knee a guy with your knee. You can't low bridge him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it was, you know, something that got Capitals fans pretty upset. But again, I mean, there was a penalty called. I don't expect there to be any fine or suspension.
No. Rule 44.2 says a player who commits these fouls will be assessed a minor penalty for clipping. 44.3 says if an injury occurs as a result of this clipping check, the player must be assessed a major penalty.
You know, it's amazing, Dave, that Drew just has these rules memorized.
Yeah,
right off the top of my head.
Totally off.
Nobody tweeted that earlier or yesterday while watching the game or anything. It was a blown call by the officials in only giving that a 2-minute tripping penalty. I understand why. The game is so fast, it's probably difficult to assess if that's truly a clip or a trip without using video review. And I would say it's fortunate that Ovechkin obviously was healthy enough to come back into the game, because based on how he reacted to the injury or reacted to the clip, you would have thought that he blew out a knee or something. And I'm not saying he was faking, because I don't believe he was at all. I think he initially was injured, and maybe once the shock wore off of it, he realized he was in better shape than he initially thought. And it is also fortunate that the Capitals capitalized on that power play, say that 10 times fast, and were able to get that goal to give them the lead. But if Ovechkin is out for the remainder of that game, and all that is assessed is a 2-minute minor penalty on Kadri for tripping,
that's a bigger deal.
It's a way bigger deal. I thought, I mean, Kadri, I don't know. And then
I like the way Kadri's played, and you've really seen his game evolve in the last couple of years, Drew. But, you know, for me, Ovechkin was not very effective after that hit. And, you know, he had a few, I guess, you know, you'd call them minor scoring chances. But, you know, Nicklas Backstrom, you mentioned TJ Oshie. Backstrom and Oshie have been just amazing this entire series. Oshie has been so clutch. Mm-hmm. I think he has the most points on the Capitals
in the
series.
7 points. He leads the Capitals in points in the series.
For me, the best line, though, yesterday was Johansson, Kuznetsov, and Williams. And I've had some problems with the way Kuznetsov, I mean, Kuznetsov in the first period thought he scored a goal. And it turns out that Freddie Anderson just made a great save. His glove was right on the line. But for me, the Johansson, Kuznetsov, Williams line was the better line. And, you know, Backstrom and Oshie, I thought, were pretty good from the start of the game to the end of the game. But you could tell Ovechkin, I'm not saying that necessarily Ovechkin was feeling the effects of the injury, but he just didn't play as much and he wasn't as effective. You also had a lot of power plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs there in the second period. So Ovechkin doesn't typically go out for the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's something that, you know, we're talking about now. But going into Game 6, I mean, the Washington Capitals have to make sure that that series doesn't go back to Washington. You don't want to give Toronto a chance. And I think Toronto is feeling good about their game. Every single game in the series, guys, has been a one-goal game. I mean, they've proven that they can play with these guys.
Yeah, and this is a series that I had the Capitals sweeping the Leafs. I thought that this wasn't going to be. I thought this was a David versus Goliath matchup.
Well, and Drew, you weren't alone. I mean, I picked the Caps in 5, and why wouldn't you? They had 118 points this year.
I think the thing I'm most surprised about is that I think everybody knew the Leafs were going to have trouble defensively slowing down the Capitals. What I think I'm surprised about most is that the Capitals have had as much difficulty slowing down the Leafs on the offensive side of things. I mean, the Leafs are a tremendously talented team.
They're quicker than Washington.
Yeah,
and that's the one weakness you could say that Washington has a little bit. And
Washington's not a slow team. I mean, they're really slow team. Because Toronto does look that fast.
Toronto
out there.
Might be a top three speed team in the league, though. You put Pittsburgh up there, and I don't think Toronto is that far behind when you talk about guys like Austin Matthews and William Nylander. Zach Hyman, by the way, has also been fantastic in the series. And then, you know, Drew, we can't forget to mention, without Carl Alzner in the lineup, he's one of their best defensive defensemen. And,
it's true.
You know, Nate Schmidt has been good. I like Nate Schmidt's game, but you miss Alzner. I mean, he's probably going to be the most sought-after free agent defenseman aside from Shattenkirk in the summer, right? That is, of course, if neither of these guys re-sign with Washington, right?
And most people are sort of expecting Alzner will probably re-sign with Washington. Most people think that Shattenkirk is unlikely to sign there. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the impact of Alzner being out of the lineup, it bumps everybody up on the Capitals' back end. And the Leafs have been able to take advantage of it thus far in the series. I think Mike Babcock has done a tremendous job. I don't know that he's... I think he's probably out-coached Barry Trotz, which isn't an insult to Trotz. I just think Babcock has done an excellent job coaching and getting the matchups he's wanted to. I don't think Trotz has done a poor job behind the bench for the Capitals, but I think Babcock is really showing everybody why he is considered the best coach in the NHL.
Right, and the most important thing, I think, for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the series is that they've kept the games close, right? Again, four of these games have gone to overtime, and it's not like Backstrom and Oshie and Ovechkin have been completely shut down. I mean, these guys have got their points. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, even in game four, in a game in which the Washington Capitals scored four goals in the first period, the Leafs were able to make it close. Austin Matthews scored that late goal. It ended up being a 5-4 final. So I give the Leafs a lot of credit. I agree. I mean, we know how good of a coach Mike Babcock is, Drew. His record speaks for itself with the Red Wings and the Ducks and the Canadian Olympic team and all that. But, I mean, the Leafs, I think, have really shown that not only can this team score goals, I think they had the sixth most goals in the league this year, but you know they're pretty good defensively. Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner led all defensemen in ice time yesterday. Zaitsev didn't play in the first two games. He's been pretty good. Even think a guy like Matt Hunwick, who's kind of been a journeyman defenseman, he's had a pretty solid series. So give the Leafs a lot of credit. It's David versus Goliath, and they've managed to tame Goliath. I mean, like the Caps have still scored their goals. Freddie Anderson's played well, and you know, let's be honest, Braden Holtby hasn't been excellent either.
No.
Well, that was going to be my point. I was going to say, like, the truth is, and I think part of the reason why Toronto's been able to sustain what they have is that Braden Holtby hasn't been the Braden Holtby that he usually is.
914 save percentage for Holtby, which is certainly lower than most people would expect from him.
And the Washington Post reported that the Capitals actually considered pulling Holtby in favor of Philip Grubauer. So, I mean, like, at one point in game four. So, I mean, you have to think to yourself, like, if that's your goalie, and, like, let's be realistic, I expected Holtby to be phenomenal. He's always, you know, steps up to the plate and always plays big in these types of situations. And I really anticipated him kind of seizing the bull by the horns and really being the guy in the playoffs that Washington could rely on. So, I was a little surprised by his play overall. I mean, you know, obviously it was good yesterday, but the fact is that you really need a hot goaltender in the playoffs to really sustain, you know, the full four series. And can he do that? I think so. I think this is a bit of a hiccup, and I think you'll see a better Braden Holtby after this round.
Dave, you can make the argument.
You're assuming they go through.
I'm assuming they're going to go through.
You could make the argument, Drew, that the Nylander, Matthews, Hyman line has been just as good, if not better, than the Backstrom, Ovechkin, Oshie line.
Mm-hmm.
And that says a lot, because that Backstrom line is probably the best line in hockey. So give these guys a lot of credit. They really haven't wilted under the pressure.
No, when the lights have been the brightest, they haven't had... I mean, even that, you're right, that game four when they're down 4-1, well, they battle back to make it 4-3. Then, you know, the goal is scored. I think it was Oshie who scores it, the goal that Freddie Anderson obviously wants back to make it 5-3. Leafs are able to make it 5-4. So the Leafs haven't wilted at all as the lights have gotten brighter. Game six tomorrow night, available here on TSN 1290.
It's probably going to go to overtime.
It seems like as though more than likely will, given how the first five games of the series have gone. And quickly, before we had to break on this one, we mentioned Carl Alzner being out of the lineup. It is fair. You got to mention, of course, that the Leafs have been without Roman Polak. So, you know, can't mention one team without their absence on the back end without mentioning the other. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Rangers and the Habs series. Game six of that series goes tonight on Broadway, Madison Square Garden for Game 6 as the Rangers look to close out the Habs. We'll talk about that series next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
It's a game winner for Mika Zibanejad. Rangers win 3-2 and lead the series 3-2.
Always nice to hear Chris Cuthbert on the call. That game five, Mika Zibanejad wins for the Rangers. They win in the Bell Center. They have an opportunity tonight to clinch the series on home ice at Madison Square Garden as they lead 3-2. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Keener Jerseys is the best place to get your jersey needs taken care of. The Rangers and the Habs, another fascinating series, guys. Game 6 tonight, as I mentioned. The Rangers, you know, before this series started, I thought that the big concern for the Montreal Canadiens was going to be goal scoring. And through, you know, the first five games, I still have that same concern. Sure, the Habs have been able to get their goals in a couple of the games, particularly game two where they scored four and game three they got three goals. But the other games, they just haven't been able. Zero goals, one goal, two goals. Max Pacioretty still looking for his first goal in the series. The Rangers have a golden opportunity ahead of them tonight on home ice.
Yeah, and you know, you add up those goal totals, Drew, and the Habs have scored 10 goals in five games, and that's just not going to cut it. You can throw in the shutout there in game one, but and you've been right so far. And you know, even though I picked the Habs to win the series, I had this series going seven games, and there's a good chance that still happens, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, huge game tonight at MSG in New York. And, you know, you talk about Max Pacioretty, and, you know, Max Pacioretty is a guy, you remember 3 years back in 2014 when the Habs went to the conference finals, he was one of their top players. And he's the captain of this team, but he has to be better. And Max Pacioretty is getting his shots on net. I think in game three, he had seven shots on net, if I'm not mistaken. So when you're talking about this Habs team.
He's got 24 shots in the series,
right?
Which is far and away the most on the Habs. Brendan Gallagher is second with 18 shots on that. So Pacioretty is getting his opportunities. But sorry, go ahead, as I interrupted you.
Well, and it's not just Max Pacioretty. Philip Deneau doesn't have any goals. Andrew Shaw doesn't have any goals. But when you're talking about Max Pacioretty, I mean, he is a four-time 30-goal scorer. I mean, he just has to be better. We're talking about five games of the series now. We're not talking about, you know, one or two games. So for tonight's game, I mean, it is pivotal that at the very least, if Max Pacioretty is not scoring a goal, he's contributing and his line is going. And, you know, Alex Galchenyuk is another guy for me who, you know, he has not really found his groove in this series. And when you look at that overtime period, guys, I mean, it was completely one-sided in the Rangers' favor. And earlier in that game, there were many stretches of the game where the Habs dictated the pace and had the better scoring chances. And mm-hmm. for my money, I mean, Carey Price has been excellent. I mean, goaltending has not been the problem for Montreal, and it hasn't been defense either. I mean, these games have been close games. You know, you mentioned, you know, the Habs have had trouble scoring goals, and for me, that has been the key to this series. I mean, they just haven't sustained their offense for big chunks of this series. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, game two, they exploded a little bit, but, you know, it's something to be concerned about.
And, you know, watching that game five, I thought to myself, Montreal looked phenomenal early on, and just at when they took the lead and then they were maintaining the lead, they didn't look like they were trying to push. They didn't look like they were trying to create more opportunities. They, at that mm-hmm. point in the game, to me at least, it appeared that Montreal was content to sit back and kind of rest on their laurels and really try and hold that 2-1 lead over New York. And then New York ties it late in the second period. And then third period was decent for both teams. But like as he just talked about, overtime was all the Rangers. I mean, if Montreal would have won that, that would have been a huge victory simply because they really didn't look like they deserved to based on the way that the Rangers dominated overtime. And as he's right, like the big guys haven't stepped up. I don't think Shea Weber has registered a shot in the last two games. I mean, that's you need a guy like Shea Weber to be driving. Radulov has also dropped off after his, you know, was phenomenal the first three games. Game four, he was okay, and then game five, he wasn't really noticeable. So the problem is, if you're Montreal and you like, as he talked about, I mean, they've got 10 goals and they've got guys who can put the puck in the net, and they're not doing it right now. And you know, you're not going to win. And you know, Carey Price has been very good, and you're not going to win. He can't score goals for you though. So you have to give him a couple of goals to work with. And the team isn't doing that. And as a result, they're down and need a big victory tonight.
Yeah, they need a win in New York. We're never easy to do, especially when the Rangers have an opportunity. It's, you know, an elimination game. The Rangers out on home ice. I mean, it's a golden opportunity for them. This would be the kind of game where the Habs are going to almost demand Carey Price steal the game for them, because I'm just not sure they're able to get enough offense. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist, it's not like they're playing against a Joe Schmo of a goaltender on the other end of the ice. As good as Carey Price has been with a .936 save percentage through the first five games, Henrik Lundqvist, even better, a .944 save percentage.
Well, you know, you mentioned that Carey Price might have to steal the game, right? And it could go the same way. You could say the same thing for Henrik Lundqvist, but, you know, .936 save percentage, Carey Price's goals against is under two. I mean, you can't ask for much more out of Carey Price. I mean, the New York Rangers, I mean, we talked about the Rangers. Zibanejad didn't do much for the first four games, and then he gets, you know, a couple of goals in game five. And for me, the best player for the Rangers in this entire series has been Rick Nash. Rick Nash has just been incredible. And, you know, he sets up Brady Shea for the first Rangers goal. And he's a guy that, you know, he wasn't being talked about a lot heading into this series. And when you think of the New York Rangers, you think of that top line of Kreider, Stepan, and Zuccarello. And, you know, for the most part, those guys haven't been that effective. I mean, they've had their chances and all of that. But I for me, it comes down to, Drew, the Canadians have got to get going offensively.
Well,
and, you know, and they need to finish. And for me, a lot of the shots were coming from the outside. I mean, the Rangers are a good defensive team. Ryan McDonagh has been excellent in this series. And, you know, Ryan McDonagh is out for usually 25-plus minutes a game. And for me, he's been the best defenseman in the series. And, you know, Alexei Emelin comes back in Game 5. He missed the first four games of the series. I thought he struggled a little bit. He looked a little shaky at times.
Yeah, and that's probably not a surprise, a little bit of ring rust on him as he's trying to get back into the swing of things. And you mentioned Radulov earlier, and you're right, he's, you know, tailed off in the last couple games. But really, how much more can he's had such a good impact in the first few games of the series. He's got 6 points in the five games. That it's time for somebody else besides Radulov to step up for the Habs. It's time for Max Pacioretty to figure out whatever his struggles have been and get a key goal when the Habs need it, because that's really been their bugaboo that we talked about really all season long. It's what we talked about entering the playoffs. When can they get that key goal when they need it? Whereas on the Rangers side, they've had just very balanced scoring throughout the playoffs. When, you know, the Zuccarello line's not going, that's when Rick Nash, who had a down sort of, he had an average at best regular season, has been able to step up his game for the Rangers when he needs it the most.
And I remember saying this as we were previewing the first round, Drew. I mean, Galchenyuk and Pacioretty have a combined 0 goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yes, Galchenyuk has, you know, had some assist here, but, I mean, they have to be better. I mean, this is primary scoring. Galchenyuk, you're talking about a top-three draft pick, right? And Pacioretty, we mentioned it. I mean, he has to be better, and he's been good for the Habs previously in the playoffs. I went back to 2014 when they went to the third round. So, I mean, they have to get going here, or they're going to be out. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, who has to step up and all that and where you're going to get the goals from. But, I mean, these games are going to be very close. Three of the five games, if I'm not mistaken, have been one-goal games, right? And then the other one was the first game, which was 2-0.
Right.
And there was an empty netter in that game, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, really, four of the five games have been one-goal games. So, I mean, they're going to be tight-checking. But, I mean, someone is going to have to explode here offensively.
One player I was going to say for the New York Rangers who kind of caught me off guard, because it's almost like he's not playing at 100% is Chris Kreider. I feel like his game has been like...
They've been talking about that on the broadcast.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it just, to me, you know what you are... You should be seeing from a player like him.
He's got one assist on the series.
Yeah, and what was the assist? The assist was on Zibanejad's goal, overtime winner. And it was funny because it really looked like a harmless play,
mm-hmm.
but it happened to get redirected off of the Habs defenseman, and it went right to Zibanejad, who put it in for the OT winner. But really, it should have been, Carey Price was set to take a fairly harmless shot from Kreider on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Kreider, I mean, perhaps that gets him going and gets some good feelings in his game, even though it was a complete accident. But,
they were talking about that all over the broadcast, that they speculated that he's gun shy, that maybe he was warned before the series that, you know, we're going to keep an eye on you to make sure that you don't get too close to Carey Price, because of course it was Kreider who ran over Price and forced him out of the series a couple of years ago.
I don't know. I find that hard to believe that a player is going to adjust his game simply because of something like that. I mean, regardless, I didn't like when that hit happened a few years back. I didn't like it. I thought it was a bad play. But the fact is, I don't know that a guy's going to adjust his game based on something he did a few years ago and say I'm going to stay outside of the blue paint because I've been warned. I don't know. I find that hard to believe.
I agree with you. Or that, you know, maybe he adjusts it. You know, he adjusts his game. Maybe it affects his game for 20 minutes. Maybe it affects it for an entire game. But 5 games into the series, he does seem like he is shying away from contact. He's not going to any of the quote unquote dirty areas. He does seem to be very passive, which is not what you expect from a guy like Chris Kreider.
Well, you know, this is the type of game, though. At MSG, they're playing in front of their home crowd, even though the Rangers actually didn't have a very good record this year at home. But the Canadians have to get a little bit nasty here. And for me, that was lacking a little bit in Game 4. We saw earlier in the series, I mean, these two teams, only 1 point separated them in the standings. But early on in the series, I thought there was a lot more physicality. I think the Habs have got away from that a little bit. When you've got guys like Radulov and Brendan Gallagher and Andrew Shaw, Dwight King, Steve Ott, I mean, you've got to make it difficult for the Rangers when you're going in front of your net. And for me, that game was a little bit passive. It was very back and forth. You know, you had a lot of scoring chances off of the transition. But for me, the Montreal Canadiens have, you know, got to go into the dirty areas a little bit more and make it more difficult. Get in Henrik Lundqvist's face, right? So
disturb him. I mean, you almost wouldn't be surprised to see that fourth line for the Canadiens. I mean, that fourth line, they're not. You don't expect them to score, but you want to see Dwight King, Steve Ott, and Torrey Mitchell. You want to see them really get into the grill of Henrik Lundqvist and make him start thinking about those guys. Make it uncomfortable for him to be in the net, within reason, of course. But you're right. It was too easy for Henrik Lundqvist, I thought, in Game 5. And the Habs are going to have to make his life a lot more difficult in Game 6 if they want to go into MSG, upset the Rangers, and send the series back to the Bell Center for a decisive Game 7.
Right. And there's a lot on the line here for this Montreal Canadiens team, Drew. I mean, this team won the division. And I realize that the New York Rangers, you know, got the wild card spot, but really they shouldn't have been in that wild card spot based on how many points they had. It was just because the Metropolitan Division was so good this year. But I mean, this Canadiens team, if they want to go out again in the first round, I mean, then you know, score one or two goals. But for me, this is going to be very interesting to see. I think they're going to have a good response. I don't think they like the way the game ended last time, and that's to be understood, because anytime you lose a game, you're not going to be happy with that. But Galchenyuk and Pacioretty, they got to get going. I can't say that enough, and we'll talk to Amanda Steyn about it, but I mean, 5 games, no goals for those two guys. I mean, that's just not acceptable.
When we come back, Amanda joins us from Madison Square Garden, where the Habs and the Rangers will do battle tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Amanda Steyn. Amanda covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690 in Montreal. She joins us from New York, where the Habs and the Rangers will do battle later on this evening. Amanda, good morning, and thanks for doing this.
No problem. Thank you for allowing me back on Winnipeg Airwaves.
Before we get into the series, do you have any public apology you would like to make to the good people of Winnipeg before we get into teeth of the series?
Yeah, I feel like I need one, because when I tweeted that I was going to be on, a lot of people reminded me of my last appearance where I, you know, didn't mean to, but insulted Winnipeggers and the city of Winnipeg. But I am now adding it to the list of my must-see Canadian cities and places to be. So I look forward to the wonderful people of Winnipeg welcoming me with open arms.
Well, we will see you in August.
Did that sound genuine?
That sounded very genuine. We will see you in August for Ezzy's wedding. You and Dave, of course, going to the wedding together.
Yeah, it's
going to
be a great horror.
Yeah, it will be a lovely horror.
Oh my
we hope
God,
you'll have your dancing shoes on.
In the world.
Yes. Amanda, obviously, we appreciate the apology, and I'm sure the people of Winnipeg will now build a statue in your honor or something along those lines. But, of course, we brought you on to talk about the Rangers and the Habs. Game series goes tonight at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers with an opportunity to close out the series on home ice. And we were talking about this series last segment. Can the Habs win this series? Can they still stay alive in this series if Alex Galchenyuk and Max Pacioretty don't find the score sheet, if they don't get their games underneath them and finally get their first goals of the series?
Well, in theory, yes, because the games that they have won are ones where they haven't scored. As you mentioned, both are held scoreless right now when it comes to goals. But for me, more so than that, it's the intensity level for a full 60 minutes that's going to, you know, be the reason why they win these games. They absolutely, yes, do need Max Pacioretty and Alex Galchenyuk to find their scoring touch again. I think the reason I say that, or I know the reason I say that they can win this without that scoring touch is because I don't believe we've seen the best of Carey Price yet. He is the best goaltender in the world, and he has not put together his best performance yet. He hasn't stolen a game for Montreal yet, so if the other top players in this core are not going to perform, it's going to be up to Carey Price to get this to at least a game seven.
Amanda, in your opinion, why was Montreal so outplayed in that overtime in game five? To me, they looked tired, and they just weren't generating a lot of scoring chances in that extra frame.
Well, keep in mind, like, you know, everyone says that, like, oh, here we are, like, the series is so so close and everything, but the Rangers could easily have already had this wrapped up if not for Thomas Mechanic scoring in regulation a couple of games back, right? They almost won that game. So it's not as close as some people may say it is, at least from my opinion. But, you know, when it comes to the intensity level and being completely outplayed, I guess, you know, I would have to give credit to the New York Rangers. I was in the locker room afterwards, and Henrik Lundqvist said that he was the last person to speak before they came out, and he said, let's take charge. And that's exactly what they did. So, yes, you know, it was on Montreal to match that intensity level, and they didn't. But tons of credit to the New York Rangers, who decided they wanted to win Game 5, and they were going to do everything they possibly could to do it.
Amanda, which player for the Habs really needs to step up in this game, in your mind, aside from Carey Price, to help this team get it to a Game 7?
Well, we mentioned it before, Max Pacioretty. Now, he's getting the chances. That's the positive thing. And I know that's really cliche to say, but he's getting the shots and he's getting high-quality chances. They're just not going in. And, you know, keep in mind, they're not up against a slouch goaltender. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist is one of the best goaltenders in the world. But it's going to have to be from him. It's going to have to be from the scoring, from the top players scoring and contributing. You know, you can't rely on Arturi Lehkonen and Paul Byron game in, game out. It's great that they're scoring and it's great that they're contributing, but you're going to need a guy like Max Pacioretty to figure out his scoring touch. And unfortunately, he's a really streaky player. We've seen this from him over the course of his career. He'll go 15, 16 games without recording a goal, and then he'll score 15 in the next, 20 games. Something. I mean, I'm exaggerating to make a point here, but he's going to have to be one of the top guys other than Carey Price.
Amanda Stein is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Amanda joins us from New York, where she is covering the Habs and the Rangers for TSN 690, our sister station in Montreal. Amanda, how would you evaluate Shea Weber's series so far? He's got a goal. He's got two assists. He's playing, upwards of 28 and a half minutes in terms of time on ice per game played. How would you evaluate his series? Has he been as effective as the Habs would have hoped from him, or have you seen areas in which maybe his game has slipped a little bit as the series has progressed?
Well, as the series progressed, I mean, he made an error on that game-winning goal for the Rangers in the last game. But that aside, I mean, Shea Weber has come as advertised, especially when it comes to the playoffs. I know last year he had a rough series, particularly in the last game for the Predators, but he has really, really been a joy to watch as a spectator from the crowd and from the press box, but just as a force to be reckoned with on the ice. He takes so much attention, from the opposing players that it leaves much more room for Montreal's other players to get opportunities. I think this is the time of year that Marc Bergevin went and got Shea Weber for. He's contributed in goals. He's contributed, you know, with logging a ton of ice time. And that fight, I wouldn't even call it a fight he had the other day, but when he pummeled Miller the other day, that's exactly what they're looking for. And he is, I would say, the least of Montreal's worries when it comes to this. And I do just want to add a caveat to the prior question about another player who needs to step up, and that's Alex Galchenyuk, for obvious reasons.
Amanda, Alexei Emelin missed the first four games of the series. He returned for Game 5 at Bell Center. How did you think he looked, and how important was it for the Habs to get Emelin back in a series that's been so close?
You know, it's been a little iffy, like, the decision, because not only did he miss the first couple games of the playoffs, he missed a bunch towards the end of the season, so he really hadn't played in a few weeks. And so you're looking at a guy who's not particularly fast on the best of days coming into a series with two, you know, really quick teams in a really tight series, as you mentioned. It was okay. Let's put it that way. He was okay. I mean, I think what they wanted from him was the booming hits that he's able to throw down, and they did get that from him. But I don't think the time is now, especially going into Game 6 tonight, that you're going to need him in that regard, because he does have so many deficiencies, you know, whether it be because of injuries and coming back from injuries, that it's the right choice right now to have him in the lineup, especially when you have other effective defensemen sitting in the press box. And if you want that booming, you know, the big open ice hits and all that, you have a guy like Mike McCarron, of course, he's a forward, not a defenseman, sitting in the press box as well, who can also help out on that, you know, on that physical regard.
Well, Amanda, that leads perfectly into my question, which is, do you anticipate any changes to the Habs lineup for tonight's game? And second one for me is, how would you evaluate Claude Julien's coaching so far in this series for Montreal?
Well, I'm going to start with that second one, because the second you said it, reminded me of their last game, and I was very confused by what was going on, because they were leading the game, and all of a sudden in the second period, for some reason, he started changing up his line. And one thing I've realized covering this team over the last couple of years with this core is that they're not super into line changes in the middle of games, particularly when they're winning. It kind of a bit of a head scratcher. So that game, I was a little, I didn't understand what the game plan was, let's say. I didn't understand why that would be the case. But over the course of the time that he's been here, I think he's really helped turn this team around, particularly with their penalty kill. But in this series, it's kind of hard to say exactly, because you've got two coaches who are all, you know, who are also both very methodical with how they do things. It's hard to say who really has the edge. But game five there was a little confusing as to what Claude Julien was doing. And in terms of lineup changes, we'll know in about an hour when the team hits the ice. The Rangers are out there right now practicing, but I do expect some sort of lineup change, whether it be the removal of Nathan Foligno, who's had a tough series, maybe Brandon Davidson coming in. I think it's a toss-up between Emelin and Foligno coming out of the lineup to possibly bring in Davidson. Of course, I could be wrong. It happens all the time that I'm wrong, but I'm just giving you my gut feeling. And maybe you have someone like Mike McCarron coming in for Dwight King, who really has struggled since he's come here to Montreal at the trade deadline. I'm not sure that they're getting from him what they thought they would, or whether he fits well enough with this lineup the way he did in L.A.
Matt, is it safe to say that the line that's caused Montreal the most problems has been the line of Jimmy Vesey, Mika Zibanejad, and Rick Nash? It seems to me like Rick Nash is just all over the ice.
I mean, it feels like Rick Nash of old, right? It feels like Rick Nash of, you know, his heyday in Columbus. He's been outstanding, and I'm waiting for Montreal to, you know, step up to Rick Nash, although he is a really big dude, and just get in his way, because it seems if Rick Nash wants the face on the ice, he gets it, and Montreal have to match that. Montreal cannot allow particularly Rick Nash to get that space on the ice, because he is so insanely talented, and it's like I mentioned, he's channeling, you know, his younger years in this series, and he's plowing right through Carey Price, and that just cannot happen, because they will not win if they don't shut down that top line. I just saw him right now score a sick goal on Henrik Lundqvist. I'm just sitting here in the arena, and he's practicing just as hard as he does play.
Amanda, we'll let you go on this last question. It's probably the most important question of the interview. What are the pros and cons of New York-style bagels versus Montreal-style bagels?
Oh, not even a question. Montreal bagels are a million times better. I don't even eat these New York bagels that are all fluffy and fat and disgusting.
St. Viator bagels for life, right, Amanda?
Now I've insulted the people of New York.
Yeah, and they're a lot less understanding than the people of Winnipeg, let me tell you.
What's the consensus on your side?
Actually, you know, Amanda, we've got some good bagels here in Winnipeg. They're known as Guns Bagels in the north end of Winnipeg, so maybe we'll have to ship you some.
She's coming in August. You don't have to. You can just take her there in August.
I don't think they beat Montreal bagels.
You know, they. Yeah, it's a real tough battle, but I think that Montreal and New York bagels win out over Winnipeg. But we have
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Really?
Guns all the way.
Okay.
I bet you. I would like Winnipeg bagels more than I like those of New York. I don't even eat bagels here because they're not bagels. They're just like big, like dough.
Well, yeah, that's the best
circular
part of
dough, which I guess.
Wait, Amanda, are you talking about Drew or are you talking about bagels right now?
Hey, that's not nice.
That's the nicest thing he's ever said to me, Amanda.
Well, you know, I try sometimes.
We'll let you get back to practice, Amanda. Appreciate it. We'll see you in August.
No problem. Take care, guys. Have a good one.
Bye, Amanda. Amanda Stein from TSN 690 in Montreal, covering the Habs and the Rangers at Game 6 goes later tonight. When we come back, we recap the Senators and the Bruins. They went to double overtime last night. The series continues. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Faceoff control by the Bruins. McAvoy with a shot to flick it. They score! Corrali! Sean Corrali with his second of the game. The Bruins stay alive. Force a game six on Sunday.
That's the Boston Bruins scoring last night in double overtime.
Sean Corrali.
Many people said, who? He's the player that the Boston Bruins acquired from the San Jose Sharks in exchange for for Martin Jones, the Sharks' very good goaltender. Sean Corrali capitalizing on his opportunity, getting into the Bruins lineup, scoring two goals last night for the Bruins as they extend that series. Goes back to Boston for a game six tomorrow afternoon between the Bruins and the Senators. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Sean Wayans in town all weekend. All shows sold out. Response was so fantastic, they've added an additional show. That's tomorrow night, Sunday night, 9:45 p.m. Some tickets available for that show. So if you missed out on getting tickets for the previous shows, because they were all sold out, get them real quick. RumorsComedyClub.com, a 9:45 p.m. show added for tomorrow night to see Sean Wayans at Rumors, and a list of fantastic comedians available at RumorsComedyClub.com.
The question, though, is, Drew, will they be playing White Chicks before Sean Wayans' set?
Well, if they're not playing it at Rumors, and I don't know the answer, I assure you that Dave probably has it on a permanent loop at his house.
Oh, no question. It's in my repertoire on the PVR.
Yes, you do. You are the... The two of you, how many times have the two of you sat down and watched White Chicks together?
Well, it's got to be in double digits.
It's a pretty high number.
It's a pretty high number for you know, two guys who don't live together to sit around with each other and watch a movie.
Something to mention about Sean Corrali, he actually played with Jack Roslovic at the Miami University of Ohio in 2015-16. And he's from, if I'm not mistaken, Dublin is a suburb of Columbus.
I really don't.
In Ohio.
It sounds familiar, yes.
So now we have two players this year that have made their debuts, the first players ever to be born in Columbus and play in the NHL. Jack Roslovic first, playing for the Jets in Columbus.
Sure.
And then now with Sean Corrali. Pretty amazing story, Drew. He scores his first two NHL goals in the playoffs, including one in overtime. And as you mentioned, he wasn't a guy that really many people knew heading into the series, but now everybody knows who he is.
His name is now attached to Bruins hockey lore as he is able to give them the victory last night and extend the series to Game 6.
It's a fantastic game.
Well, before we talk about Corrali's goal, what about the disallowed goal in the first overtime?
I thought that should have been a goal.
The goal that was disallowed for goaltender interference.
Yeah, it should have been a goal.
You thought it should have been a goal?
Yep.
You thought the goaltender interference was more of the incidental variety than anything else?
Well, and that's the problem that we've had on this show, Drew, for how many years about goaltender interference. There's such a gray area. It's not a small gray area, in my opinion. It's a large gray area, and I thought it was incidental. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, how much contact Craig Anderson actually had, and I realize that they have to make the call and they look at it from a bunch of different angles, but I thought Boston should have won it there.
That seems to be the consensus. Most of the pundits and those giving analysis after the game on, you know, any of the networks that do so thought that that was a goal mouth scramble play in that, you know, Anderson gets knocked over, but, you know, if you read the rule and how it's referred to, is sort of there's different rules for knocking over a goalie when it's incidental versus when it's on a rebound, and most people thought that it should have counted. Now, ultimately, it's sort of like the Kadri hit on Ovechkin, in that Washington is able to win the game, Ovechkin's able to come back and play in the game, so it's sort of just going to be a quick little, you know, not even a one-day story, but a quick little blip as part of the whole game story. Can you imagine if the Senators are able to win that game in overtime? An overtime that the Bruins, I should say, dominated.
Bruins fans would have went bananas.
They would have gone absolutely ballistic. They are able to, this is a goal that's disallowed when most people would have said that it should have been counted. In any event, the Bruins are able to win. Sean Corrali, they head to Game 6 tomorrow afternoon back in Boston, with the Bruins looking to extend the series to Ottawa for Game 7.
And, Drew, I have to admit, I mean, this series really didn't excite me heading into the playoffs. When you talk about, you know, the series that have been the best so far, you're talking about Toronto, Washington, you're talking about Montreal Rangers. For me, Edmonton, San Jose has got to be up there. I was looking forward to the Calgary Ducks series, but that obviously was a sweep. That disappointed. Chicago, Nashville, again, was another one of those series I was really looking forward to, but again, disappointing in the sense that it only went to four games, right?
Sure.
Not disappointing for Predators fans, but, you know, I thought that this series would be more low scoring than it has been, and what's kind of fascinating to me is you've had three of the five games that have been relatively low scoring, especially Game 1 and Game 4, but then Games 2 and 3, you had 7 goals, and you had Ottawa winning both of those games in overtime, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, the Leafs series and the Capitals, Leafs and Capitals series, you've had 4 of 5. In this series, you've had 3 of 5 go to overtime. So we have a series now, right, guys? I mean, Ottawa had a chance to win it last night, obviously, and didn't. But
and had so many power play opportunities.
Yep.
Towards the end of the game, the Bruins went back-to-back penalties. One a puck over glass, then a too-many-men-on-the-ice penalty. They took another penalty in overtime. There were so many opportunities. The Bruins were sort of handing it to the Senators on a silver platter. And you wonder if the Senators' lack of killer instinct last night is going to end up costing them if it ends up going, you know, if Boston is able to win in Game 6 back at home.
Well, and that really has been, you know, the bugaboo for the Senators in years past, right, Drew? It has been the lack of finishers, right? And, you know, Bobby Ryan had a really tough regular season, but he's actually been very good. This series. He scored some really key goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, it's been pretty simple. Craig Anderson has badly outplayed Tuukka Rask. And Tuukka Rask had, you know, kind of a hot and cold regular season. He started off well, had some troubles at the midway point of the season, then he finished really strong. But, you know, for me, the Bruins guys are missing three of their top four defensemen, right? Charlie McAvoy is only in this series because Torrey Krug is injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've not only got Torrey Krug injured, you've got Adam McQuaid injured, right? And then you've also got Colin Miller injured. Pardon me, Brandon Carlo is injured. So, I mean, the fact that the Boston Bruins right now have Joe Morrow, Charlie McAvoy, and Tommy Cross in the lineup, I mean, it's pretty incredible that this series is going to six games. It's really tough to overcome having three of your top four defensemen. You think back to when the Jets were missing their defensemen earlier this season, they really struggled, right?
Sure.
It was really only a couple of years ago that you know, they were able to, you know, bring in some new players and really overcome that. But for me, that's been the storyline of this series, that, you know, Charlie McAvoy's actually looked pretty good paired up with Zdeno Chara. So, you know, Game 6, we'll see what happens. But I'd expect it to be another close game, because almost every game in the series has been close.
Yeah, I think a big thing for Boston that they were able to rally around was the Weidman hit on Krejci and knocking him out of the game in the first period, in the first period.
Chris Weidman with a what looked like a knee-on-knee hit. I don't know that it was...
I didn't think it was a particularly dirty hit, but I think from what I've read, what upset a lot of the Bruins players was that after Krejci went down and he was slow to get up, and then he slowly made his way to the Boston bench, there was a lot of chirping from the Senators players, and I think that, you know, they took some umbrage to that. So as a result, that's what they're claiming they rallied around, was the chirping from the Senators players. So, you know, that's good. That's nice to rally around. But then you lose a player like Krejci, and we don't know, obviously, if he's going to be back for Game 6. And that could be potentially a big loss for the Bruins. So it's nice to win that game, obviously, to try and continue the series. But, one player from Ottawa who I really liked is Bobby Ryan, because we talked about him. You know, we've talked about him with a number of the broadcasters from Ottawa and how his season's kind of been an up-and-down season during the regular part of the season. But he's been really good, and he's been a noticeable player for the Ottawa Senators. So
The OT winner in Game 3, had the game-winning goal in Game 4 for a guy who had a very difficult year. It is good to see Bobby Ryan sort of recapture some of that finish that made him one of the most prolific goal scorers a number of years ago in the NHL.
Absolutely. And you know, you touched on it, Drew. He's had an incredibly hard off the ice this past season, and he's really seemed to put it together for the postseason for the Senators, which obviously they're going to need if they want to make any noise for moving forward in the playoffs.
Yeah. And the Senators have got balanced scoring. They've had 8 different goal scorers in the 5 games so far, right? And, you know, we haven't even really touched on Erik Karlsson.
Wow,
Erik Karlsson has been just absolutely fantastic. I don't think that anybody is going to argue that he's been the most impressive defenseman in the playoffs. He's playing big minutes. He's playing out on the penalty kill. He's playing on the power play. I mean, the way he's skating, Drew, reminds me of Scott Niedermayer.
Entering Game 5, before yesterday's game, the Senators had 10 goals on the series.
Yep.
Karlsson had the primary assist on 4 of those 10 goals. And then never mind his pass from below the goal line.
It's unbelievable.
Tape to tape, while going, you know, I don't know how many feet in the air to land dead on Mike Hoffman's stick to send him in for a breakaway in Game 3.
Was that the best pass of all time?
I was going to say, it might be up there. It's one of the most memorable passes
of all time. And, well, also, the way Hoffman ended that play.
Well, yeah,
and
it's scored a
that
goal.
Yeah, and scored the Jamlov.
Or the Forsberg, depending on your era and your preference.
And your city of choice.
And, you know, give the Ottawa Senators credit, and give Guy Boucher a lot of credit. You know, he brought in a system this year. The Senators have been much better defensively, led by Craig Anderson and Mike Condon. They both had excellent seasons, but, you know, give a guy like Derek Brassard a lot of credit. I didn't think he had a very good regular season by any metric you want to use, and he's leading the Senators in scoring in this series. I think he's been very sharp, but again, I mean, they've got balanced scoring. I mean, Erik Karlsson is playing great. So again, I mean,
only one goal.
Flip a coin, Drew, as far as who's going to win Game 6.
Only one goal on the series for Brad Marchand, which is, of course, he almost had 40 this year for the Bruins. So I think the Bruins would want to see a little bit more from him, particularly in a Game 6. That's the kind of game where they would want to see their best goal scorer really step up. And we don't know, of course, the status of David Krejci after that hit where he left the game yesterday. So that could be another huge loss for an already injury-riddled Bruins team. But Brad Marchand, a guy that I would keep an eye out for in Game 6.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, he's been a little bit quiet in the series. And, you know, he misses the last 2 games of the season with that suspension. But, you know, he can be better, and he is their best player. And I thought Patrice Bergeron, you know, didn't have his best game either in Game 5. He can be better.
Yeah.
But took
that penalty in overtime, yep, a cross-check on Bobby Ryan.
Yeah, and, you know, the Bruins were able to kill that penalty off. But, I mean, you know, the Bruins have to be better as a group. And, you know, I think they're lucky at this point that they've taken it to Game 6.
Game 6 of the Bruins and the Senators, that goes tomorrow afternoon back in Boston. When we come back, we talk about the Blues and the Wild. The Blues have a 3-1 series lead. I think that's a surprise to a lot of people. Game 5 is this afternoon back in St. Paul. The Blues and the Wild, they're up next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Dubnyk, with his second career playoff shutout, stopped all 28 shots, and the Wild stay alive, and we head back to St. Paul for a Game 5.
Game 5 of the Blues and the Wild this afternoon in St. Paul, Minnesota, after Devan Dubnyk backstops the Wild to a 2-0 shutout in Game 4, preventing the sweep by the St. Louis Blues of the Minnesota Wild. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number two here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Gentlemen, the Blues jump out to that 3-0 series lead over the Minnesota Wild. I don't know that anybody saw that coming. Most of us, I think, predicted that this was going to be a very close series. But the Minnesota Wild just haven't been able to score, you know, one goal in game one, one goal in game two, one goal in game three. They get two goals in game four. They shut out the Blues. It's been a very low scoring series. There's only been 12 goals scored in the first four games.
It's unbelievable.
Of this series.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I was looking forward to the series, I think, like we all were, but, you know, there just hasn't been a lot of goals. And it's not like Devan Dubnyk hasn't played well, but let's be honest, guys.
Save percentage.
Yeah. And Jake Allen's numbers, he's got a 966 save percentage in four games. It's incredible. By the way, I don't think, you know, this series, because there hasn't been a game since Wednesday, I think a lot of people haven't been able to get into the series, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've had so many days off between games. Usually you only have the one day off between games, but you know, game five coming up this afternoon, and you know, I picked the St. Louis Blues to win this series, but certainly, Drew, I didn't think that they would shut down the Wild like they have. And you know, give Jake Allen a lot of credit, but I mean, this Blues team has been a good defensive team for years and years and years. And you know, just because Mike Yeo takes over for Ken Hitchcock towards the end of the season, nothing's going to change, right? So I think Alex Pietrangelo, Colton Parayko, Jay Bouwmeester, I mean, they've been fantastic. And
Joel Edmondson's having a great series.
Joel Edmondson's got two goals, including the game winner there,
yeah.
And Colton Parayko also has a goal. So I mean, for me, Sabatka, Steen, and Zachary Sanford has actually been the best line, because we even haven't really seen Vladimir Tarasenko do much offensively in this series, right? Mm-hmm. I think he's only got the one goal, right? Or does he even have a goal?
Has no goal.
So there
two
you go.
Assists.
He doesn't even have a goal yet, Drew.
Yeah.
So, you know, I haven't watched a lot of this series, but, you know, the games I have watched, it's been very tight checking, not a lot of space out there, and that's mm-hmm. what we expected. And, you know, game five tonight, back in Minnesota. I mean, the Minnesota Wild have a small chance in the series. They have a fighting chance, but I mean, some of the big dogs have to get going, right? And you know, you look at guys like Jason Zucker and Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter, Mikael Granlund. I mean, where have they been in the series?
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Coyle's got two goals. I mean, for a team that's only got five, he's got two of the five goals. But Eric Staal, who had a tremendous year, he's got one assist on the series. You know, there's just not a lot. Granlund, one assist on the series. And yeah, Jake Allen stole that game one for the Blues, but it seems like ever since then, he's sort of been in the head of the Minnesota Wild. They just can't get anything going offensively. And you wonder again, is this going to be another sort of classic Bruce Boudreau playoff exit? A guy who is one of the best regular season coaches, but just can't get it, for whatever reason, can't put it together come playoff time.
Well, you know what? I mean, look, they deserve credit because they've played phenomenally defensively for the most part. I mean, you know, you have the occasional miscue, which seems to go in the net. But for the most part, it's a race to two goals. If you get two goals, you pretty much have a guarantee to win the game. So,
yeah.
I mean, I give Minnesota a lot of credit for the defensive play. I mean, a lot of their guys have stepped up and played extremely well defensively, not just the guys that you would anticipate, like the Suitors and the Spurgeons and stuff, but, you know, a lot of other guys who are taking on that role. But the problem is that you can't simply just play defense. You have to be able to, because a lot of these guys right now are keying in, and there's a reason why Tarasenko doesn't have any goals. They're playing him extremely well. If you watch these games, you can see that they're taking away his time and space to create, mm-hmm. which, of course, with a guy like Tarasenko is exactly his bread and butter. So they've done well. The goalies are playing well, and it's simply just, I mean, this isn't one of those. When they were up 3-0, it was like, oh, well, they should be. It very easily could have been a 2-1 Minnesota lead, or, you know, a 2-1 St. Louis lead. Like, the games have been that close that it really hasn't been a dominating performance by one over the other. It really has just been an opportunistic taking advantage of that chance and then getting the goal and then holding on and getting the win.
Well, you look at game one. I mentioned Jake Allen, who had something with like 50 saves in that game one. The Blues are able to win it in overtime on that Edmondson goal. Game two, it's a 1-1 game until Jaden Schwartz scores, like, on a wrist shot. I mean, a good shot, but probably one that Devin Dubnyk wants back in that scenario when there's about, what, 2.5 minutes to go in that game?
Yeah.
I mean, these have been very close, you know, one bounce here, one bounce there, and it's probably a 3-1 Minnesota lead as opposed to a 3-1 St. Louis lead. The problem for the Wild is when you're down 3-0 to the St. Louis Blues, it's hard to believe you're going to be able to win four straight. When you can't get it going offensively, I mean, you're not going to be, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to win four straight when you can't score more than two goals a game.
You know, we talked about the Bruins Senators series last segment. We talked about the Leafs Capitals series, the Habs Rangers series. All four of these series have been close. If you're a hockey fan, you have to love that almost all of these games are one goal games and they're going to overtime. But yes, Drew, I agree with you. I mean, the goal scoring has not been there, but you have two excellent defensive teams, right? And I actually think that the St. Louis Blues are a horrible matchup for the Minnesota Wild. And when you talk about Alex Pietrangelo and Jay Bouwmeester, they've been matched up against the Granlund Koivu-Holla line quite a bit, and that line has not done much. I mean, Mikko Koivu, I would probably say, has had the best overall series. And, you know, we talked about Zach Parise and Charlie Coyle have been providing most of the Minnesota Wild offense, which hasn't been a lot, right?
Sure.
So
they've only had three goal scorers. I mean, they've scored five goals, and they've only had three goal scorers. Parise's got two, Coyle's got two, and Martin Hansel has one. Other than that, nobody's been able to score anything. Score for the Minnesota Wild whatsoever.
And you know, type of game like this where you have some players. I mean, even the younger players on the Minnesota Wild have playoff experience, but guys like Mikko Koivu and Jason Pominville and Eric Staal have to step up in a Game 5 situation, right? Because you know that these two goaltenders are not going to allow a lot of goals, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, if the Minnesota Wild end up going out in five games, it's going to be very disappointing for a team who almost won the Central Division. Chicago, you know, came on late at the end of the year and won the division. But, you know, we've already seen one first seed go out, right?
Yeah,
so in that sense, we shouldn't be surprised, guys, because, you know, gone are the days where it's a big shocker if the 8 seed beats the 1 seed. Maybe it's a bit of a shocker because this was the first time an 8 seed had ever swept a 1 seed. That's never happened before in NHL history. So, I mean, nobody really expected the Chicago Blackhawks to not win a single game, right? But, mm-hmm. I mean, this series, it's a chess match. It really is. And, you know, Mike Yeo has done an excellent job, I think, of getting a guy like Vladimir Sobotka into the lineup, not only bringing him into the lineup, but he's playing on the second line with Steen and Sanford, right?
Doesn't look like he's missed a beat. He's been over in the KHL,
right,
for 4 years now?
And, Drew, this is a team that went to the conference finals last year. They don't have Robbie Fabry. They don't have Paul Stastny. Paul Stastny might come back.
Yes, I was going to mention Paul Stastny, a possibility to return to the Blues lineup for the first time since March 21st for this afternoon's game in St. Paul.
And then the question becomes, Drew, where do you slot him in?
Well, I mean,
apparently he skated with Schwartz and Tarasenko on the first line in practice yesterday.
It's a good problem. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Barbashev's actually done a decent job there. I mean, he's a rookie, but I've actually been impressed with Barbashev.
Yeah, but Stastny is, I mean, that's...
No,
Stastny goes back.
I mean,
in
Stastny there is a top center. I'm just saying. I mean, he hasn't played at all in this series, and then you're going to pluck him right into the first line, right?
Yeah. And for on the Wild side of things, there's a possibility to get Eric Hall back in the lineup. He's missed the last couple games as well. So those would be two big additions, one for each team.
Yeah, Stastny's much more big than Eric Hall.
Of course,
Eric Hall adds that element of speed and all of that.
But Stastny's their, you know, a top line center for them.
So that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's impressive that they're up 3-1 in a series where they're missing two of their top offensive players. Robbie Fabry was excellent last year.
Mm-hmm.
For the St. Louis Blues in the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, again, how many of these series, aside from Nashville, Chicago, and Calgary, Anaheim, two of the 8 series to me were one-sided.
Yeah.
6 of the other series have been very close.
The Pittsburgh-Columbus one was also pretty one-sided.
Sure, I guess, but, you know.
But you're right.
They kept it interesting. At least they pushed it to 5 games, and some of the games were close.
There was a lot of offense certainly played. But in terms of the first-round series that are still going on, a lot of them have been absolute coin flips. And this was a Blues team that really didn't seem like they were going anywhere this year. They were in disarray. Obviously, the coaching change with Hitchcock out and Mike Yeo in.
The biggest difference, Drew, is remember when St. Louis was in Winnipeg, I believe that was February, and Jake Allen was kept home.
Yeah, right before the All-Star break.
If I'm not mistaken, Phoenix Copley started that game.
That is correct.
So was that January, maybe?
It was right before the All-Star break.
Okay,
so late January.
January, February, whatever it was. And since then, Jake Allen has been really good. And in, I would say he's been the best goalie of any goalie in the playoffs so far.
966 save percentage. The numbers would back that
up. So good for him. I mean, he was the backup to Brian Elliott for several years there. Elliott was excellent for the Blues last year. And, you know, Allen has stepped up and, you know, he's completely shut out the Wild.
Well, the Blues could also get back Yuri Laterra, who hasn't played since game one. And he was practicing also. And he was on the line with Sobotka and Pjärvi. So
it seems likely. I mean, sure. Could the Wild have a 4-game winning streak in them? Sure, it's possible.
I wouldn't put anything past them. I think
all the games have been that close.
That's what I'm saying. So I mean, if you give the Wild a couple of chances, they smell a little blood. I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, they have to get some more offense, though. I mean, you can't win 4 games in a row by a 2-1 or a 2-0 margin each and every game. You do need to have some sort of offensive explosion, as much as of an explosion you're going to get from the Wild in this case with a very tight checking Blues team. But I mean, Jake Allen, 966 save percentage, a 1.17 goals against average. He's been fantastic, and he's got the Minnesota Wild on the ropes entering Game 5 this afternoon in St. Paul. When we come back, we discuss the Buffalo Sabres. They cleaned house. They need a new coach. They need a new general manager. No word if Jack Eichel is going to be both of those. That's up next, the Sabres coaching and general manager change. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Coaches and general managers throughout the league sending their resumes to upstate New York as the Buffalo Sabres are in the market for a new head coach and a new general manager after a disappointing season, after a season that was featured some tumultuous times and some reports of not everybody being on the same page. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the Sabres cleaned house. Were you surprised? You know, we heard about how it was a disappointing season in Buffalo. We'd heard reports of some disagreements between Jack Eichel and Dan Bylsma. I think people maybe expected a coaching change, but a complete overhaul with a new general manager, with Tim Murray being dismissed after he received a contract extension last summer. I think that came as a surprise to a lot of people when the Sabres decided to clean house on Thursday morning.
If anybody says they weren't surprised, Drew, that both Tim Murray and Dan Bylsma were fired, they're lying to you, because no one saw this coming. And we were talking about it just 1 or 2 weeks ago, you know, with the situation with Jack Eichel. And I, by the way, have no doubt in my mind that this had nothing to do with Jack Eichel. I know a lot of people want to frame it like that.
Really?
No, for me, I don't think you fire a GM and coach because of something that Jack Eichel might have said. We don't even know if he said it.
Well, I mean, he denied it.
Well, yeah, and
but
of course,
I mean,
he's going to deny it. But you don't change the entire regime based on what one player might have said, Drew.
If their players,
okay. Well, what's your opinion?
I don't necessarily. I don't know the answer because I'm obviously not there. But if your franchise player goes to your owner, and there's ways, they always have ways of doing it.
I don't think Jack Eichel has that much sway.
If he says, you know, if I'm your franchise player, and I don't think that these guys. And the evidence backs it up that these guys that they've had poor results, and that I think he may have tried to influence the coach. I'm surprised if he would have been able to influence the hiring and firing of the general manager. But we've seen so many cases in so many sports over the years of star players getting their way in terms of who's coaching them.
No proof that he did that, though.
There's no proof.
So that's all speculation?
Of course it is. But there's no proof that LeBron James did it in basketball. But well, everybody knows
use,
he got David Blatt fired.
You can't use other examples.
Well, I mean, you can. You can say that it's happened before where players have influence and have impact over who a coach is.
Well, again, I guess we'll agree to disagree, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, the Jack Eichel comments were completely overblown. We'll talk to Mike Harrington about it, and we'll ask him. He knows more about the Sabres than either of us, right? So,
yes.
I mean, they were fired because of the results. They look north of the border, and they see the Toronto Maple Leafs at a earlier stage of the rebuild making the playoffs. So the Buffalo Sabres did not take any steps forward this year, and both of them lost their job. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I think Tim Murray and Dan Bylsma deserve to lose their jobs, but I think at the end of the day, Terry Pegula made this decision because he didn't like where the organization was heading. I don't think it was because Jack Eichel said that he didn't want Dan Bylsma to be his head coach, or he said, I don't want Tim Murray to be the general manager. I don't think that's how it works in Buffalo.
I think the unfortunate part for everybody involved was that the optics looked bad. And so it allows for the speculation that Drew talked about, because it happened on the heels of the Jack Eichel controversy erupting over, you know, whether he would sign an extension with the Sabres or not. And, you know, of course, his agent said that he would be happy to, on July 1st, you know, get into those kind of conversations with the team. So he tried to put it to bed. But the reality was that conversation is fresh in everybody's mind. And then shortly thereafter, almost immediately thereafter, the GM and the coach get fired. So I think that people are connecting those dots, whether it's fair or not fair. Doesn't really seem to matter to a lot of people, unfortunately, as it just comes to fruition on the social media age that we live in, that's what ends up happening, is that people connect the dots, even if those dots can't be connected. And again, we're not there. We don't know what was said. We don't know what goes on behind the doors and stuff like that. So we can't say if there's any veracity to those comments. But again, it's out there. Someone's put their name to it, and that's the other thing. Like
WGR Radio in Buffalo, which isn't just a nobody. They're the big radio player when it comes to sports and comes to the Sabres in the Buffalo market. I think it was Paul Hamilton.
Yeah, it was.
It was Paul Hamilton of WGR Radio. He says, you know, he put his exactly. It wasn't an anonymous source. He put his name behind it, saying that this is what.
His
source was anonymous, but he put his name behind it. Right. It wasn't just random speculation. There was a name who you could attribute the comments to, right, or attribute the rumor to, at least. Let me take away the Eichel aspect of it. Was it deserved? Was this a deserving move?
Well, Dan Bylsma was only head coach for 2 years, and Tim Murray was general manager for 4 years.
Yeah.
Right? And I believe Tim Murray had several years left on his contract.
He had just signed a contract extension last summer.
Right. And so, I mean, when you're talking, again, I don't want to go back to Jack Eichel necessarily, but, I mean, Jack Eichel's dispute was apparently just with Dan Bylsma, not with Tim Murray as well, right?
Right.
So that's why it was surprising that both of them were fired, even though recently we saw Dean Lombardi and Daryl Sutter fired. So it's not unprecedented, Drew, that you see a general manager and a head coach fired at the same time. I would say it's rare, but it isn't unprecedented. So, I mean, is it deserved? I mean, you look at some of the moves that the Buffalo Sabres made, and they weren't the greatest moves. I mean, the Matt Molson move, I didn't like that signing. When you're talking about, you know, what they did in the offseason, I don't think they did enough to address the weaknesses on their team. So who did they go out and acquire? They acquired a Dmitry Kulikov, who I've told you repeatedly I'm not
like
a big
him.
Fan of.
He had a horrendous year in Buffalo.
Right. And, you know, on Florida, you remember, he had a lot of problems staying in the lineup, and he had some decent years in Florida. But for me, Dmitry Kulikov wasn't enough to improve that back end. And to me, after Rasmus Ristolainen and Zach Bogosian, those are their top two defensemen right now in Buffalo. There isn't a lot of depth after that. Cody Franzen has not worked out like they've wanted him to work out. He's taken a step back, in my opinion. And, you know, they just haven't got enough secondary scoring. And, you know, Jack Eichel, I agree with you, Drew. I mean, nobody's going to disagree. The second overall pick after Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel is the future of Buffalo. I mean, he's an excellent player. He's arguably a top 10 forward in the NHL right now. And I think, you know, he's had a very underrated first couple of years. He was injured.
Injured.
So, you know, that's maybe part of the reason why, you know, more people aren't talking about Jack Eichel. But, you know, what are you going to do with Evander Kane? And to me, Drew, that's really why this move is so surprising. You have the expansion draft coming up. You have the NHL draft coming up. And then you have free agency, and you don't have a GM.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, Terry Pegula making this move now is very puzzling.
You have to hire a general manager within the week, don't you? I mean, given the tight time frames of everything you just mentioned, I mean, it's April 22nd today.
You can't wait a month to hire a GM.
No, you have to have a guy. You don't necessarily have to have the head coach in place in the next, you know, in the next 3 weeks, but you need to have a general manager. You need somebody steering that ship right away, you know, because otherwise, how are you going to approach free agency? How are you going to approach the expansion draft? How are you going to approach trading a guy like Evander Kane, who's rehabilitated some of his reputation by having a pretty decent season in Buffalo? You need all these things. You need somebody to steer the ship, because as we saw, particularly say in Florida this year, when there's nobody steering the ship, it just leads to anarchy underneath and disaster for a team. Here's Mike Harrington. This is from the Buffalo News in regards to, and we'll talk to Mike coming up in about 5 minutes' time. You know, it's hard to say what happened to Tim Murray this season. He flat out froze at times as if he felt this was another development year and it wasn't playoffs or bust. Given his contract extension in October, maybe that's how he felt. Murray didn't make any trades early in the season when Eichel got hurt. Didn't fire Bielsma during the season when it could have been justified. Got nothing done at the trade deadline either. Tim Murray probably deserved another season to try to fix things, especially on defense. But it's known the Pegulas, those are the owners, Terry and Kim Pegula, especially Kim Pegula, have often cringed about his style since he was hired in 2014. Other GMs may have been off-put as well. League officials, especially officiating supervisors, could not have been happy with the way they were berated by Murray at times either. It really sounds like the downfall of Tim Murray wasn't necessarily the moves that they disagreed with so dramatically or the lack thereof. It was often the style and the way he went about his business. That maybe arrogance, maybe a lack of communication, maybe just not willing to, I mean, for lack of a better word, be professional enough is what doomed Tim Murray with this decision by the Sabres earlier this week.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, also the results, right? I mean, again, I mean, I didn't pick the Buffalo Sabres to make the playoffs. I also didn't pick the Toronto Maple Leafs to make the playoffs. But when you look at what the Leafs did with a much younger roster,
yeah.
I think it's hard for Terry Pegula to look at this team and not think that, you know, it might not be heading in the right direction, right? And you look at, you know, Kyle Okposa was their big free agent signing, right? And he kind of just had a decent year. Wasn't anything great. And, you know, he's a guy that they really thought would elevate them to the next level, right? We can't really, I mean, not factor in Jack Eichel's injury. Not that you didn't, Drew, but I mean, you mentioned it. But I mean, that was a huge reason why they struggled early on. But again, I mean, what are you going to do with Evander Kane? He's got 1 year left on his contract. Mm-hmm. Kyle Okposa and Ryan O'Reilly are tied up long term. I believe they each have 6 years left on their contracts, right? So, I mean, to me, I don't really know where the Sabres team is going. I don't know what their identity is. They're a hard team to play against. I mean, the Sabres beat the Jets earlier this year. We saw them twice. A couple of times this year. You're right. They beat them twice, Drew. So I just don't know where they're going, right? And as you said earlier, they're going to have to figure this out quick because you have the draft coming up. You have the expansion draft coming up. You have free agency coming up. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to not only hire a head coach, but the GM is more important to me.
You still don't know who if Robin Lehner is the goalie of the future that you can really tie your wagon to. And that's been the story with Robin Lehner really going back to when, in Ottawa, where Tim Murray, of course, came from Ottawa as the assistant GM. He acquires Robin Lehner, and Robin Lehner has been decidedly average at best.
And the whole team has, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Sabres aren't an easy team to play against, but it's a team that at times, it's a lot of individual players. It's not, I think, a very, overwhelming team in any regard, especially the defense and in goal. I mean, but you've got a lot of firepower. Sam Reinhart, I mean, you know, he maybe hasn't progressed as quickly as they thought, but he's a really good player. And, you know, I've always liked Tyler Ennis and, you know, Matt Molson. I mean, again, that was a horrible contract. He's got 2 years left mm-hmm. at $5 million a year. Molson just isn't the same player he once was. Dating back to the years with the Islanders when he was tearing it up with John Tavares. So
a lot easier to do it with Tavares.
They have a lot of important decisions to make, starting with the expansion draft.
I mean, it's sort of underreported, but the Sabres have been, I'll tell you what, ever since they signed Ville Leino. Remember when they signed Ville Leino? What was it?
Wow.
10-year contract?
You're going back a long time here, Drew.
But ever since that year, it was a 10-year contract they gave
Ville
Leino.
Actually, the contract just expired this year. No, I'm joking.
They signed him to a 10-year deal?
I believe that's how long it was back in the day with
he shouldn't have got a 1-year deal.
Was it? Maybe it wasn't 10 years.
10 years seems extreme, Drew.
I thought it was right before the. It looks. Yeah. I'm reading Cap Geek here, and it says.
I think you're thinking of Rick DiPietro, Drew.
Yeah.
I thought he got more than. He got 6 years only. I thought. Who am I thinking about? Did Erhoff get 10 years from the Sabres?
I don't know. This is your point, not ours.
My point is that the Sabres have been in disarray now for going back almost an entire decade. And that's a real problem that they've had. Yeah, pardon me. It was Erhoff who got 10 years. Erhoff got 10 years and $40 million from the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, that was a terrible contract.
The same summer that they gave Ville Leino that big contract.
I don't think that was a Tim Murray contract, was
no,
it?
No, that was Lindy Ruff. Yeah. That was Lindy Ruff and Regier. Yeah. But that's since 2000.
Well, Lindy Ruff didn't sign the contract.
Yeah,
Regier.
But Regier did. But ever since then, ever since they got that sort of, they were no longer the small market Buffalo Sabres when the Pegulas came in, this has been a franchise that's been in disarray. And anyways, let's go to break. Mike Harrington's going to join us from the Buffalo News. We'll talk more about the Sabres. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.